We're back at it live in the Goat District. We've got my man Dan Williamson, as always. And we have two special guests, two guys we drafted against recently in the Hard Way Best Ball Draft, Billy Muzio and Davis Matic. How you guys doing today?
Doing great, good, man. Theo. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Awesome. Happy to be here. For today, guys. Let's get after it.
Go District! Bleep, I ball. Bleep, I ball. Bleep, I ball. Bleep, bleep, ball. And I bleep, I ball. Bleep, I ball.
It's the Goat District, y'all.
I ball, cause I bleep, bleep, bleep. Hey, bleeding, I ball. Defeated the odds, didn't see him at all. JD in the pies, I needed it all. I bleeded a lie, you bleeded a lie, not bleeded a lie. And that's what a goat do. Facts, let me show you. Happen to know dudes. Drafting, they don't do bad and they don't lose. Make you wanna bleep, bleep. It's the Goat District, boys, giving you the business and no gimmicks. The best ball drafts got me feeling like it's Christmas. Yeah. Then it's Christmas all of a sudden, and these riches came from nothing. And I got this all from loving the district. See, I just drafted, forget it. I laugh at the critics, they mad at the digits. I clap back by listening. See, ballin' ain't a problem if you kick it with them off. And I refresh the feed till autumn, then I bleep, 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 go.
So back-to-back balling in the district. Last night we had a beat Bagbatoba on, the two-time Football Guys champion. That was a tremendous podcast. We got a lot of information out there. Today we have two of the sharpest guys I know, two guys who are known in the industry but are also known in high stakes, and they have a significant amount of skin in the game, and they do very well in the high-stakes format. So this is a pleasure.
Not this year, but overall you run
pretty pure most seasons, Davis. You're definitely a name in these high stakes leagues, and Billy Muzio as well. Both of you guys repeat guests in the district. And we competed in a draft last week. Dan, myself, these guys, Abib, a few other FFPC hitters, some very well known drafters. It was a really, really great process. I think for me, it kind of got me in the best ball mindset. I know I'm in another one tonight with Billy Muzio. First off, can you guys let everybody know where they can find your stuff, Davis?
Yeah, if you just search my name on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts, you'll get the Takecast and the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast pulling up, and then I tweet out links to everything that I'm doing on Twitter at Davis Maddox, just my name. So it's all right. It's all right there. Easy to find.
And Billy, how about you?
Yeah, it's right down below here at FF Muzio on Twitter. Currently with full-time fantasy, there'll be a little bit of announcement. I'll give you a little bit of teaser. There will be a change in sites. I'll announce it probably on Super Bowl day. And so excited for the new journey to kick off. And I'll continue doing rankings and projections over on the new site as well.
No, definitely fired up to hear about your new venture, Billy. Dan, we talked to Abib last night about the Tom Brady retirement fallout. We all talked about kind of the quarterback landscape. But I have a question for Davis and Billy. Where do you guys expect Aaron Rodgers to play in 2023? And what direction do you see Tampa Bay going in, not only with their quarterback position, but kind of the overall direction of their team? Start with Davis.
I think Rodgers is just going to be the quarterback of the Packers, or he's not going to play at all. He counts like $47 million against the cap, I believe. And even more than that, because you know, the way the NFL works is you actually cost more against the cap if you get traded. I think because they amortize the salaries in such a way. So it's really hard for the Jets or the 49ers or the Raiders or whatever to eat that salary. And then honestly, I've been thinking about this. I think the Buccaneers are going to do a classic Indianapolis Colts situation and try to be good enough with Jimmy Garoppolo, Derek Carr, Carson Wentz, you know, who I think that with, cause they have so many vets on their roster. If you look at their roster, it's an old roster. It's not really a team ready to be turned over into being bad. So I bet the division stinks too. You know, that's a big part of it. So they're looking at this division, like, what are the Falcons going to beat us, or the Saints? And the Saints roster is pretty old, pretty bad. So I think they go after a bunch of these vets that are going to be out there. And I think, like, if the market right now is really discounting Godwin and Evans because they're expecting Kyle Trask or Blaine Gabbert to be the quarterback, they both seem like good buys to me.
Yeah, I love, love the ADP of both those players right now. I've been targeting them a lot in drafts. I know we're in February, folks, but we're still drafting. We have, looking at, like, just the cap situation, I always like to look at betting favorites, too. You know, Rodgers, I think Matic hit the hammer on the nail. We got Green Bay right now is plus 150 on betting odds. Vegas is actually number two at plus 400, and the Jets at plus 650. I think that's a pretty realistic sequence of events in order if it were to happen, just looking at cap space as well as, you know, necessity for the teams. You know, Rodgers is a California boy at heart, you know, so I think SF would probably be up there, but I don't think they're going to be able to make it work with draft picks and cap space as well. So I'm agreeing here with Matic. I think Green Bay is probably the lead. I think I would probably put the Jets ahead of the Raiders if I was going to be betting on this. Just because we've seen the news lately that talks have been heating up, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It'll definitely change the landscape of both divisions.
Yeah, and Dan, we talked about you know, some of the fantasy fallout last night with, you know, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, who were both drafted as top 20 wide receivers. Is there anything else, you know, you're looking for fantasy wise from this fallout with Tom Brady?
From Brady, no. I mean, if Aaron Rodgers doesn't end up in New York, I think it's time to have a fire sale on the Jets. Either that or petition Nathaniel Hackett to be the first coordinator fired before the season even starts. one of the two. I'm just not at all wild about that situation.
So we're going to go ahead and dive right into the draft that we did. We talked about the kind of the history of the hard way last night with Habib, but it's basically just a high-level draft. We try to be one of the first best ball drafts in the FFPC. Was it your first best ball you've drafted this year, guys?
Yes, it was.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, not non-playoff stuff. I've been grinding my eyes into oblivion doing these playoff drafts. But, yeah, I mean, I'm going to try and take a break from now until April and just get into like rookie stuff, because, you know, it's like the May to June drafting, but like by August, you know, doing these best ball drafts, it like on, like, you're just getting sick. It's like, it's just so hard to keep clicking these names. But I do like doing this draft every year just to get a framework to start thinking about things over the off season. Like, I think it's pretty, instead of like looking at ADP fresh in May, to just have an idea of where the market roughly has guys.
Yeah, I like to do the never too early drafts, and I like to usually try to get half of my maxed out leagues done before people really dive in, just because ADP is so exploitable and it's the wild, wild west, especially if you do projections and rankings. You take a look at, like, last year, for instance, you had Mike Williams and Pittman going in rounds 8 and 9 prior to the signing of, you know, the quarterback situation in Indianapolis, and prior to Mike Williams re-signing with the Chargers. If you have a pretty good pulse of the NFL and at least have a base understanding of projections and rankings, you can really exploit the current ADP and kind of predict the landing spots of players, or even in some situations, like Matic even said, people are just, you know, straying away from all-star players like Evans and Godwin just because of the uncertainty. And as soon as someone is signed, those ADPs will rise, you know, 2, 3, 4 rounds in some scenarios. So I think that now is the time, if you're a savvy and a savvy drafter and a sharp player, to get ahead of the curve and try to build some monster squads. You know, one of my best balls from last year, top 9 rounds all went inside the top 3 rounds come the end of the year. And so you can really create some competitive edges and set yourself up for some big paydays.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a misconception, is some people think that it's – I think you hit the nail on the head, Billy, because sometimes those teams that you drafted early, where you are able to kind of identify guys that rise in ADP or spot values, those teams do very well. And I also think that also applies to – main event teams, to NFFC higher stakes teams, like some of the earlier ones sometimes do well. Things change over the summer. You think about, you know, injuries, you know, potentially you drafted the proper backup running back who just, you know, you luck into an RB2 in certain situations. So I think that's kind of a misconception, is you can't find value early, that more information helps you. Sometimes if you're sharp, less information out to the drafting public creates an edge for you. So definitely anybody who's listening to Goat District should try to hop in some early best balls, kind of challenge yourself.
Yeah, couple thoughts on that also. Like, you'll find drafts where it seems like nobody really seems to have an understanding of the rookies and, you know, like what they're all about. You know, and you won't know that until you get quite a few rounds deep in, you know, because, you know, people will always be drafting Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs and JSN and all those guys. But, you know, when you start getting into a little bit any deeper than that, and, you know, you'll find leagues where nobody seems to have any idea or any interest in drafting them, you know, so you can just load up on those rookies late. But you got to recognize it before, you know, you don't want to start drafting the rookies too early in those leagues. Otherwise, you just take your own edge away from yourself. So, but that's a place where you can get an edge. And generally, I find that these early season drafts, it's kind of like it used to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago in the space where, you know, I could have a pretty solid, you know, just by studying up, I had a you know, kind of an edge on a lot of the competition, because I was more knowledgeable about what was likely to happen than my opponents were. And I think this is kind of the last time of year where that's really very much true, because once you get into, you know, even like mid-April, you know, Twitter gets pretty sharp on a lot of these guys. They will definitely mislead you on a few, but, you know, there are a lot fewer bargains to be gleaned the later you get into draft season.
I just like to also just point out real quick, if you do our volume drafter, I think it's important for you to also track your profitability by month.
Yes.
Right. Like, I've had like consistently now for two straight years, really bad Julys. So I'm going to be changing things in July this year. Just traditionally, I've had success in the beginning, like now, and then closer towards the kickoff of week one with all the information on the table. But you know, track those months that you do, you know, well in, track those months that you may have opportunity in, and make sure that you make adjustments.
Billy, those are just $350 mock drafts, man. You gotta get those going. So guys, we have the board up. I drafted out of the two spot. Dan drafted out of the nine hole. Billy drafted at the one spot, and Davis was in the 10 hole. Just from an early, you know, preference, what did you think about drafting from the 10, Davis? Was that a spot you were just like, okay, or were you a little bit excited to be in the back end of the first round?
I think it's going to be good early because you're going to be able to get Bijan there. But by the time Bijan is an Arizona Cardinal or whatever, like, he's going to go ahead of Eckler. Like, just prepare yourself for that now. It's just like, that's going to happen. And by the time we're doing these in June and July, and you're just taking two of the wide receivers you like there, you know, when you get the 10 and you're like, all right, I'm going to take Diggs and AJ Brown, or I'm going to take CD and Waddle, or CD and St. Brown, or whatever, I think you're going to hate it. I think it's going to be very similar to last year. You're going to want to pick as early as possible. And I think my guess is that this year, huge edges are going to be in taking McCaffrey, Jefferson, Chase, and Kelsey. And then there's a pretty big drop off after that for Adams. It's offensive concerns. For Cup, it's offensive concerns. And then for the rest of the guys, it's just Chase and Jefferson are their own tier. And then there's probably like 10 wide receivers I'd put in a tier after that.
And Billy, you have drafted from the one hole twice now in early best balls. You're running pure in terms of getting one spots. How do you feel about the one hole? And I'll also follow up. How do you feel about the early 2-3 turns?
So it's actually funny. I've had now, so I've done, I'm on my fifth draft right now. I have two in the one hole, one in the three hole, and then two in the 12 hole. So I've got the best of both worlds on the turns already. I like So I'm pretty flexible with draft rooms. I'll draft anywhere. I will go after specific players early in the year just based upon ADP and how I'm projecting them in my model. So I think that regardless of where I'm at in the draft room, I can always find value. That being said, I love the way that the draft kind of fell to me in round one. Here inside the hard way, quarterback, as expected, was pushed up the board with all the uncertainty. We see that every year in these early drafts. And as we start getting clearer situations, we start to see the ADP kind of settle with quarterback. I think the same can be said about tight end this year as well. We're going to see increase in the elite tight ends, and we'll probably have kind of that tight end dead zone this year as we had seen in the past, and then we'll have some more clear routes of success for that position as well. But right now I'm loving the wide receiver value, and it looks like another great zero running back year. I think last year was a great zero running back year as well. Just with the value and how the boards fell, you were able to get significant value like Miles Sanders late in drafts. And I think you're going to see a lot of that similar board layout this year as well.
Yeah, Davis was a little bit Pat Corain-esque in his build here with the two early running backs. We talked about the three-hole. Billy, you mentioned you drew a three-hole. And Davis, you just mentioned a couple names. Curious which way you guys and also Dan are approaching the 103 right now. Davis, I'm assuming Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson are your top two. If not, please correct me. But what way are you handling the three?
I would still take McCaffrey first for me. He just having a running back who is going to score the most fantasy points just feels like a huge edge because like we see how quick running back drops off. Like by the time you get to running back, I don't know. I don't feel that good about drafting Saquon Barkley. Like Barkley had so many bad games last year where they just forgot to use him in the passing game. Kenneth Walker doesn't get used in the passing game. Najee Harris sucks. Travis Etienne doesn't get used in the passing game. Breece Hall has an ACL tear. Joe Mixon might not even be retained by the team that he's on right now. They might decide they don't want to give him any money. Josh Jacobs, who knows where Josh Jacobs is going to play? Like not to say that Davante Adams, Cooper Kupp, Tyreek, that they're going to score as many points, but they just feel so much easier of clicks to me. The guy who feels impossible right now as we're on February 2nd to feel confident in either ways. Travis Kelce was already the oldest first-round pick of all time. He was slightly older than Randy Moss on season start the last time as a first-round pick. I think our buddy Rich Rebar did the research on that. Now we're talking about taking a 34-year-old in the first round of a fantasy football draft. I mean, Travis Kelce is amazing. I think he's probably going to play this feels like he could be effective at 40, you know, with the way he plays and not necessarily needing to be run after catch. But I have a feeling for the first time in my life, I will be underweight on Travis Kelce relative to the field at this price. And could totally see that being a losing strategy, you know. And if he catches 115 passes, I'm going to feel like a real jerk. But a 34-year-old at 103 feels rich.
I was underweight on Kelce last season for the exact reasons that you're talking about, Davis. And let me tell you, it was not a good feeling.
It feels bad. Yeah.
It feels real bad. It definitely hurts the pocketbook as well.
I've been like that with Derrick Henry for about a decade.
and Billy, I know you've gone Ja'Marr Chase at the one and Justin Jefferson at the one. Who is your 103? And we'll stick with FFPC for now.
So I think depending upon we all have a strategy as we go into each draft room. You know, are we gonna go zero running back? Or are we going to go anchor running back? And I think that you can mix in CMC, Jefferson, Chase in any fashion that you see fit, depending upon how you want to build that team and what the construction is going to look like. I knew that we had some good wide receiver value as of right now, and I wanted to take kind of it's not a true zero running back team here on this hardway draft, but it's got a similar view to it. I thought about taking Christian McCaffrey there and going anchor. that was my first thought. And I said, no, looking at the consistency model that we've been building and also doing projections, I still have, you know, Jefferson as my wide receiver one. Chase is very close, don't get me wrong. But Christian McCaffrey was definitely in my thoughts as well. So I think you can go any of those three in the first in the one hole. I wouldn't really stray away from that too much.
Yeah, I talked about Tyreek Hill as an option for me at the 103 to lock down an elite wide receiver with weak winning ability. I don't necessarily love having the back end of the second round as my wide receiver one. I think that a couple of those guys could also rise up. So I was considering Tyreek Hill, but most likely it's Christian McCaffrey with Tyreek Hill being mixed in for me. I think Davis's concerns about Travis Kelce are valid, and we also could see Kansas City, you know, add some pass catching weapons this offseason. Dan, which way are you approaching the 103?
Yeah, the 103. I mean, one of the nice things is you can kind of sit back there and two whoever's left. McCaffrey, I can't put at the 101. I just don't feel like in San Francisco he's going to get quite that super super elite usage like he was before. Like they like to put Mitchell or somebody in there and spell him, you know, and they're, you know, McCaffrey's still getting a great workload, don't get me wrong, but it's just not like, you know, that workload that he had when he was in Carolina. I just don't see that going forward for that reason. You know, I think Jefferson and Chase are probably, going to be scoring as many fantasy points as him. And, you know, it doesn't matter to me whether my first pick is a running back or a wide receiver. I just want the point. So McCaffrey, I don't want to be underweight on him, but I'm not going to be taking him at one because I don't think I'm going to have to a lot. If I end up having to take him at one just to not be underweight, I would do it. But otherwise, I'll be getting my Jefferson and Chase in there, and then hopefully McCaffrey and Kelce at the 3-4. I'm not going to be underweight on Kelce this year. Just because I got burned so bad on it last year, you know what? And even if he does fall off, you know, if I'm, you know,
that's still the only thing. A small percentage. He could fall off, and tight end is so bad that he might be worth it anyway. Because right. I mean, he scored 114 more points than TJ Hawkinson, right? It's like it wasn't even close, and so he could fall off, and it might not matter. He's still, right. That falling off could be like 90 catches, 1,004 yards, and 7 touchdowns, which is a huge deduction from what he did this year. And that's still the tight end one, and especially in FFPC.
Right. So what it does is it kind of puts it, you know, where Kelce is not worth, you know, maybe he's not worth the 103 if he falls off that much. You know, he's worth the 103 if he does what he did this last year. He's probably worth the 101 if he does what he did this last year. But you know, if he falls off 20% or whatever, you know, he could still be the tight end one, but you wouldn't want to be taking him at 103 necessarily. You'd be wanting to take him at the back end of the first round or beginning of the second round.
Yeah. He was tight end 5 and 6 combined, this year, which is just wild. It's definitely going to be interesting to see how these early ones, shake out for sure. Taking a step back, guys, and looking at the first and the second round, what was your favorite selection value-wise? And feel free to pick one per round or just one is fine. Your favorite selection value-wise and your least favorite. And I'll say, if we're all going to pick Najee Harris as the our least favorite one, maybe we could add a second one, starting with Davis.
Yeah, I mean, so I get the Kenneth Walker pick, right? Like, I'm not saying, like, these are all top two-round selections. But my guess is that Kenneth Walker is going to have a pretty hard time earning running back 6 unless he catches, I don't know, 50% more passes than he did this last year. I think they're probably going to retain Rashad Penny. I would be surprised if they don't just give him another 1 year, $4.5 million contract. Like, I don't think he's going to be on another team. And I think the best pick is AJ Brown. I mean, AJ Brown has a pretty good argument to going ahead of Diggs, going ahead of Lamb. I mean, he's a grown ass man, right? That's what he does. I think you just anytime you have AJ Brown on your fantasy team, you're like, all right, I can get 30 points any any given week. But I'm not even, like I said, I'm not saying you can't take Kenneth Walker there, but it feels very Derrick Henry-esque. And like weeks where he breaks off a 60-yard touchdown run, you're having a great time. And any week where any given week he could be 22 carries, 89 yards, no touchdowns, and you're like, well, all right, I lost this week.
How about you, Billy?
I hate to do it because he's in the draft room, but I'm not crazy about the Bijan pick in the round one. Just from a fantasy perspective, we're as RB3, we're saying that he's going to average over 20 fantasy points a game. A rookie to come in and ask.
You like Taylor more? You think Taylor's better?
I do think we're going to see a little bit more consistency from Taylor, especially, you know, when you have the pass blocking to consider. We don't know the team he's going to land on yet. I think if we knew for a fact he was going to be in Arizona, or we knew for a fact he was going to be in a certain situation where they don't have a third down back or a pass, someone who's going to be able to be, you know, more involved in the passing game from a pass blocking standpoint, we knew that Bijan was going to be a three down back. I think that's where he'll go if we knew that today. The fact that we don't know that today, I think that that's being drafted at ceiling, and I think that we'll probably see him slide into the middle of the second round as the draft kind of unfolds. Now, again, I could be wrong if we see him land in a money spot with no other backs and he is a true three down back. I just don't think that that's going to be the scenario in his first year. I think that he's an outstanding talent, and I think that he has the skills to outperform a round two pick, but I can't say for certain from a projection standpoint that he's going to average 20 fantasy points a game.
What's the spot that would realistically take him in round one that we think he's dead, right? Where we think like, this is a bad spot. I think the one that people are saying that might take him that's actually bad is the Bills. Like we'd be thinking like, oh yeah, he goes to the Bills. They don't retain Singletary. That's good. He's going to crush. I actually think your point there makes way more sense, where James Cook actually ends up being the third down back and he doesn't get the touchdowns. But a lot of these other spots where people are talking about him, we're thinking like, Arizona, Detroit, the Commanders, Detroit. some of these players. I'm like, no, he absolutely smashes in those. Like, I actually think you kind of want him to go to a bad team a little bit, because a bad team will just, like the Steelers. Steelers are a bad team. They don't care. They give the ball to Najee a billion times a game.
Yeah,
that was the point that I made last night, was that I think if somebody uses this very high draft capital on Bijan Robinson, that's their offensive identity, that they're going to, like, if Atlanta takes
them. Saquon
Atlanta,
thing.
Yeah, Atlanta takes them, you know, one of these teams, it makes me maybe like him a little more. So it's interesting. And then, Billy, did you see any fantastic values, a guy you really liked where he went in his first two rounds?
I was also going to say AJ Brown. I think an argument could be made for him at 108, 109. I think that that's where we're going to see probably a similar trajectory in ADP that we saw last year from CeeDee Lamb, who kind of started off at the turn and started situating himself more in the 105 to 108 range. So I love AJ Brown there. If I was at, you know, the 8-9 hole, I'd probably consider him at that pick.
Yeah. For me last night, I really liked the Amon-Ra St. Brown, pick right there as a value, that Dan got at the beginning of the second round. He was 17 points per game this year. I think that he's going to have a very big year in his third year next year. I think Jameson Williams helps him on the opposite side of him. I think he'll be a target monster, just needs to stay healthy. And I would take all three of those wide receivers before I took either of the guys that were taking at tight end too. I just think that it's I have AJ Brown and Amon-Ra St. Brown ahead of Waddle, but Waddle's like right there behind him. So I would take all three of those guys before I would take Andrews or Hawkinson. And I think that Davis made some good points on Kenneth Walker. It feels like maybe we're drafting him at his ceiling right now. Dan, how about you in terms of a pick you really didn't like and a pick that you really did like?
Yeah, I like the Jonathan Taylor pick. I thought Abib got a steal there. I think if the draft were held today, I'd probably take Taylor at the 9. Rather than CeeDee Lamb. Of course, that's with now we know that Mike McCarthy is planning on calling his own plays. So
Yeah, fantasy strategy this year starts with fading all Dallas Cowboys, I think.
Right. So anyway, I like that. I'm also, you know, just to say something different than everybody else said, I'm not really necessarily a fan of Travis Etienne, where he went. You know, he could definitely grow into the role, but, you know, he had less than three targets per game this past year, which seems kind of weird in a Peterson offense, and especially with a guy like Etienne who did so much work in the passing game in college. But, you know, until he shows it, you got to wonder a little bit about that pick. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's an aspirational pick where it's at.
Quick follow-up for Davis. We could talk for an hour here about Bijan, guys. It's super interesting. But Davis, how high are you willing to push Bijan right now with your bullishness towards him? If you're drawing 105s, are you going to mix in some Bijans right now, or do you have a clarity on your rankings at this point for early drafts?
No, this felt like I was either going to take Bijan or AJ Brown. Those were the two guys I had in my queue. I'm not really that interested in Jonathan Taylor. I mean, the Colts seem like they're going to be way worse next season than they even were this year. Like they have no answers. I think they're finally done patching the quarterback stuff over, and they're just going to be content being bad for a year. Which, and like Taylor, they've used in the passing game, and then they've completely gone away from it. Where it's like to the point where they're, you know, if you're playing Jordan frickin' Wilkins on third downs over Jonathan Taylor, like what's the point? I think this comment actually is legit. I mean, because I think in our head, we all think Etienne is a pass catcher because in our mind's eye, we're like, he played with Trevor Lawrence and he had that, like a 70-yard touchdown reception in the college football playoff from Lawrence. And it's like, it totally makes sense that that's what he should do. And then they're throwing the ball to Jamichael Hasty and you're like, what's what's the deal here? It doesn't make any sense. I thought like I would have taken CeeDee, I would have taken Reek, I would have taken Kupp, Adams, I would have taken all those guys over Bijan. And part of the reason why I like taking a running back early is basically the next 15 running backs who went, I hated all their prices. I liked everyone around them. It's like, rather have Godwin than Mixon, rather have Cooper than Jacobs, rather have Olave than Henry, rather have DJ Moore than Breece Hall. Like, I liked every wide receiver price better than the running backs. I don't always have it in me to go pure stones, zero RB. But weirdly enough, looking at the draft board, a bunch of the best values are the round 8, 9, 10 running backs. Like the rounds 8, 9, 10 running backs, to me, all look pretty, pretty good.
Stick at the running back position here, and we'll start with Billy for this question. We saw 7 total running backs go in the first 2 rounds. Then we saw a run on running backs in the 3rd round. We saw 6 total running backs go in the 3rd round, which was one of the highest amount of running backs for any of the early rounds. Which guy would you be most excited to draft among those 6 guys, if any, Billy? And which one would give you the most trepidation that you think might really, really bust out here at this ADP?
You said for the first 3 rounds of running backs?
No, for specifically for the 3rd round. So if anybody's not watching and they're listening, in the 3rd round we have Breece Hall, Josh Jacobs, Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, and DeAndre Swift, as well as Joe Mixon go. So it was 6 total running backs in the 3rd round. So among those 6 specifically, Billy?
Only Swift. Chubb I'd be interested in, but probably right where he was selected. I think Abib pulled a quick one and got Swift late. If Swift is given the workload, I think there's a real argument to be made that he could be the RB1 overall. It's just they don't use him or give him enough snap counts in order to really perform at that level. We saw it towards the end of the year. I mean, health is always the concern with him as well. I still think he slept with Deuce Staley's wife. But
Deuce is out now. Deuce is out.
Yeah, I know. But I think Swift has the upside, has the skill set, and could be like a Kamara-type back. And when I say Kamara-type back, like the elite Kamara seasons, not last year Kamara. So I think Swift at the 312 is outstanding value.
And then which one is the grossest pick there among those 6?
All the rest of them except for Nick Chubb.
Okay.
I just. I think honestly, it breaks down to me as Jacobs. I don't think we're going to see a repeat what we did last year. It was. I may be wrong again, and I'll be fine planting my flag on that and being wrong twice on Josh Jacobs. I just think that everything.
It all lined up for him.
It was a perfect storm, right? And we're not going to see that perfect storm again. Any team that's going to sign him is going to want to protect that investment now. They're not going to give him the ball 42 times a game when he has an injury and he's playing through. You'd see games where like he wasn't even – they weren't even sure he was going to play, and then they hand him the rock 37 times.
Or he'd get hurt. I remember a Monday night game where he got hurt. He hurt his hand,
yep,
and was like – on the sideline, like trying to like jam his finger back in or something. And they were losing, and they were like, all right, get back in there, bud.
Yeah, it's like, let's, you know, the entire playbook was A-gap left, A-gap right. And it was, we're not going to see that perfect storm again. So I think that I'm actually surprised we haven't seen Jacobs go in round two that much yet. I think eventually once the masses come out and start drafting, we'll probably see his ADP rise just because of the season he had, which I'll be happy to see because it'll be another player off the board that I'm not interested in.
Also shows, I think, that the drafters are just getting sharper, and they're less willing to pay for last season's points. Every year, you're seeing it more and more. Whereas, you know, 6 years ago, Josh Jacobs would have been a first round pick, and I think people kind of adjusted towards that. Davis, you already mentioned you really don't like the running backs. You would have gone wide receiver over each one. Which of these six kind of disgust you the least, and which one disgusts you the most?
I mean, Barkley, obviously the least, like if they just, obviously he's still good. You know, it's just that, well, he's not as good as he was. He's not quite as explosive. And the offense is sort of, you know, it's a fine offense, but they're just not wanting Daniel Jones to drop back that much. So the targets for him weren't there, even though the target share was pretty good. Like an ideal Saquon Barkley season is you want him to catch like 80 passes, and I don't really know how much Dable wants to be doing that. And I think Etienne is amazing. Like, I think Etienne and Walker are both like really, really good players. I don't think Najee is as good as them, but it's just about the usage. And I mean that, like, we literally just saw this with Josh Jacobs. We make these assumptions about the usage, and then if the coaches just change things 10-15% one way, It's huge for them. But my base assumption would be most of these guys are overdrafted. And then Breece, round three, I mean, he feels like the biggest question mark because we saw ACLs go both ways this year. Some guy like Michael Gallup basically does not look like – I mean, we're a year and a half removed now. Gallup doesn't really look like himself, like still has not really been able to be that effective. Godwin came back early from the ACL, banged up his hamstring, and then came back even before Gallup anyway and looked really good, you know, coming back from that. So it's like if his ACL stuff goes really well and he's ahead of schedule, then you're feeling great. But if it's week three and he's not activated from the IR yet, you're like, well, I mean, I lose basically. Like that it just is the worst possible outcome.
Yeah, last night Joe Mixon gave me the most pause for these third round guys. I think he's going to be a potential cut candidate. We saw him struggle to run the football in a number of these most recent games. So he's one. I feel like he should be going a little bit lower. And then I like the Swift pick and I like the Chubb pick. I think those guys are both decent value right there. Dan, who was the one that you liked and who was the one that you were least interested in?
Yeah, I was disappointed I couldn't get Chubb. I wanted him where I took Mahomes. Swift, I like the pick. You worry about his health. The guy just has not been able to stay healthy. I don't know if he just doesn't know how to care for his body for an NFL season or what, but he's had some trouble with it. And so, you know, but as you guys have said, the upside is definitely there. I really don't like the Mixon pick. I think he should be more like in probably about the fifth round or so around Aaron Jones, Dalvin Cook, that kind of range. And, you know, I guess all I can say with Mixon is we've seen it before with him where when he's not right, he doesn't run real good. He did have that ankle injury. He came back from it. He hasn't really been the same since he came back from that ankle. You know, so hopefully with an off season, he gets righter, but it's just not a bet I feel real comfortable making, and certainly not in the third round.
Davis selected Chris Olave in the third round, and Billy selected Deebo Samuel. Maybe you guys could each kind of share your thoughts on these players. Do you view them as undervalued assets at this range in the draft, or do you view them as like the last of a tier? Where, you know, how did you feel about drafting both of them? Start with Billy on this with Deebo Samuel.
It was more of a homer pick as well, but we have a for me, you have Ayuk, who's going to be a free agent, and if we lose a target here inside this offense, we know that Deebo is going to have a little bit more of a traditional role, as well as his versatility that he's used inside the running game. So for me, I think that we're going to see a little bit more usage from him next year compared to what we saw at some points inside the 2022 season. It's very dependent upon Brandon Ayuk, but if Ayuk is re-signed or he's there again in 2023, I think Deebo might slide down in another half a round. So it was a bit of a gamble here. It was one of those hedges that we may see his ADP rise or decline here, depending upon how free agency works out. So I'm willing to take that gamble there.
I mean,
James, how about you with Olave?
120 targets, 72 receptions, 1,000 yards as a rookie. It's like pretty much just going to be building my team out of guys like that. Like, he's not even an old rookie either, too. You know, 22 years old, like turned 22 during the season. It would be pretty hard for the Saints quarterback play to be worse next season. Like, Dalton was pretty, pretty bad. There was, you know, some Taysom Hill pass attempts in there. I mean, Jameis certainly would be better for him. But I also sort of think the Saints will probably be in this quarterback carousel market. Like, I don't know if they're going to want to run back the Dalton Jameis thing. They could be a Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo style team. And also, I mean, Michael Thomas is just not going to be on this team next year, right? So I think the market is going to catch up on that. And I would imagine that Olave is going to have a very similar year to rise to like what happened to Jalen Waddle. So I bet if we go back and look at this draft from last year, I'm going to bet Jalen Waddle was 10 spots lower than his final ADP ended up, roughly.
I took Waddle last year in this draft. I think I took him in the third, but yeah, I did take him. I ended up taking him, I think, slightly ahead of ADP, but I think that's a
perfect fair enough. I guess this group is too sharp for me. So I can't make those claims, but it's just like, rookie wide receiver, smashed. I mean, he had like, what did he have, like 1,700 total air yards? Like he had a bunch of games with like over 30% target share. It's just, yeah, I mean, he's great.
I almost took Olave at the 3-1. So when I went through and Theo, we were texting about this. I have a model I create for kind of a breakout finder, and it has different criteria of all the top 15 receivers that they share. And there were six names that were outside the top 15 that hit in three of the four metrics that I like to identify in this model. And Olave was number three in that model. Deebo was number two. Number one was actually Garrett Wilson. So it's sad to see him go right before that turn. But Olave was definitely built into that model as well.
I love your Waddle comparison to Olave, though, Davis. I think that really hits it, kind of the nail on the head of where you're going to be able to draft him and what his potential outcome is. So yeah, those, it's just interesting to see the way you guys approach that round. Taking a step back and looking at rounds 4 through 8, these have been rounds that have been extremely fruitful to us as drafters the last two seasons. Cooper Kupp and Ja'Marr Chase were drafted in this range two seasons ago, and this past year, this is where most of the time Josh Jacobs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Devonta Smith, Tony Pollard all fell into, a few other guys who really hit from this range this past season. When we look at the board here, rounds 4 through 8, who are some of the guys that could really crush their ADP and be potential league winners? Starting with Davis.
I mean, I think there are a couple different guys in the mid rounds where I look like these are guys who could be off either way by like 20 spots, you know, sort of depending. I think the most interesting mid round guy to me is Jameson Williams, where we have no sample of him, right? I mean, he played like 80 snaps or whatever as a rookie. I mean, you could see him I could easily see Jameson Williams scoring more fantasy points this season than Drake London, who went, you know, roughly 30 spots ahead of him or whatever. Could also see him, you know, basically just you know, being fancy Khalif Raymond or whatever, you know, just not even being a guy you can start. So it feels like he's a pretty interesting guy to think about this early. And I mean, Kamara in round six at RB 21, I know this was like the worst season of his career. He like wasn't efficient, didn't score any touchdowns. They stopped throwing him the ball. But I mean, if this is roughly reflective of how ADP works all season long, I mean, Kamara just feels like a guy. He might end up being my most drafted.
He's got that legal action hanging over his head.
Yeah, it's the suspension
right?
That's probably.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. Okay, that makes.
We're expecting 6 to 8 games.
Yep. That makes way more sense.
And Billy, yeah. When would we have? And Billy and Dan, when do you guys anticipate having some clarity about the Kamara situation?
I recommend following Drew Davenport. He's been posting lots of legal threads. He's a defense attorney. And I think, don't quote me, but I think the next legal action is March, is when they're actually back in court. So I think we'll get a little bit more clarity then. But that's what is causing that ADP to kind of dip right now.
It would be really nice if they made Kamara's legal announcement the same day as franchise tag day. It's been really organized for all of us. That'll be really nice. Billy, any thoughts on guys you see as potential league winners in this range?
Oh man, there's so many in this range. I wish I could just trade out of my round two pick and trade back inside drafts and just load up in rounds 5 through 8 this year. You look at the board and how it's falling and from a target, you know, share distribution, snap shares, you're looking at, you know, rush share, all these different metrics. There are some players in here that could see, you know, potentially 90% snaps on a week-to-week basis. You're talking about, 24 to 26% target share in a lot of this range and a lot of players. There's a lot of uncertainty regarding some of these players, but once that becomes clear, I think that you're going to see most of these players rise in ADP. Kind of what I said earlier, we're seeing the influx of quarterback ADP because of the uncertainty. Once that settles, we'll start seeing those names drop. We'll start seeing a lot more of these rounds, 5, 6, 7, 8 receivers and running backs start to rise as we start to see some of these muddy waters become more clear. So I think this is the time now that you want to load up in these ranges because most of these players in these range are going to only rise as we get on to the season.
Yeah, last night Drake London was my pick, but I was very happy to get him there. We talked, you know, over the last 5 games, he averaged 9.5 targets a game. If it is Desmond Ridder, we've seen Ridder look for London a lot. I'm not sure which way Atlanta's going to go this season, but I like London. I like Davis's call on Jameson Williams, but I really like Traylon Burks. I think he's the guy that could just blow up.
It's not his fault, bro. It's not his fault. It was not his fault. He's really good.
And we said I was definitely hoping he would make it one more pick.
If he were just been healthy, I think he would have gone, you know, in that like Pittman, Mike Williams range.
So if you take a look at look at Terry McLaurin. He finished 12 points outside of being a top 12 wide receiver. Right? DeAndre Hopkins is going where he's going because of the uncertainty where he'd be traded to. We all know what DeAndre Hopkins is capable of doing, even at this point in his career. He's just built different, right? You have James Cook, who could potentially be the RB1 in this backfield moving forward. If Alvin Kamara avoids all the legal situation, he's probably going to be a round 2/3 pick, probably at that, you know, pick 22 through 24 range. There's so many players in this range right now that have significant upside. I mean, Traylon Burks could be looking at a 28 to 30% target share. I mean, go ahead.
You haven't even mentioned my Tyler Lockett, who has outperformed DK Metcalf.
Oh, I know.
Two or 3 years and was, what, 4 rounds cheaper?
Yeah, and I took, you know, DK Metcalf in round 2. I'm just stubborn like that. But we have so many players that are going to outperform this ADP. It's just silly.
Yeah, it's definitely a range of the draft you really want to nail. I think a lot of people who are listening in on it, I think that, you know, everybody kind of thinks about their first 2 rounds. But I think it's these rounds where you're able to get these league-winning types that really put these teams and you build these super team types. One pick that I really wanted to pick Davis's brain on was Quentin Johnson. That's a guy that I'm a fan of. I'm probably going to have a lot of in Dynasty, but you select him as your wide receiver 3. Maybe you could share your thoughts on him. And, you know, do you think he's going to go a little higher than this once he's drafted? And you're maybe a comparison you have for him as a player.
2 things. I played this wrong. Having him as your wide receiver. having him as your wide receiver three is bad, and I probably should have just taken a wide receiver instead of Lamar Jackson and done like triple late quarterback after. I mean, this round four quarterback run was nuts. And if that's the way quarterback pricing is going to go, then I probably will have a lot of Lamar if he's going to go after, you know, all these guys. But Johnson specifically, I actually think he's probably going to be the first wide receiver drafted. And I think knowing what we know about how NFL teams view wide receivers now, like, it's not enough to have one good one. It's not really enough to have two good ones. You kind of want to have three good ones. I mean, like, you know, all these guys going for first round picks. This is a horrible wide receiver free agent class. It would not surprise me if a good team with Super Bowl aspirations traded up for a wide receiver. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm reading the market wrong. Maybe it'll be Addison. Maybe it'll be Smith and Jigba that gets traded up for. But my read right now is that Johnston is going to be the first one. And at a 20 pick discount to Smith and Jigba, that felt pretty good. And I mean, I just like taking rookie wide receivers. It's like, well, I probably took Sky Moore at wide receiver 40 a couple of times. And so why not take Quentin Johnston at wide receiver 40, you know?
Yeah, and definitely listen in. We had Matt Hicks and John Lobb on recently into the GOAT District, really dove into these rookie classes already. Both pods were fantastic, and both guys are fans of Johnston. He led the nation in receptions over 25 yards, and he has a ton of yak, and he's just exciting. So it was interesting to see you take him there. Taking a step back, start with Billy on this one. From rounds 9 through 13, we really saw this group of drafters clean up all pretty much a lot of the appealing running backs. Who are your favorite picks, Billy? Any running backs that really stand out to you in this 9 through 13 range?
Yeah, I really like Kareem Hunt. We know that he's going to be on a new team next year. I'm excited to see how that plays out. We all know when he's been given the rock, he has the ability to be a, you know, top 12, 13, 14 back. I like Gainwell a lot too. I mean, of course, I selected him, but Miles Sanders also looking at potentially a new team. Gainwell definitely flashed. This draft was done prior to the NFC Championship game. So we know that what he was able to do through the playoffs. I actually really like Gainwell's skill set. I think he's actually a better fit for this team than Sanders was. And I think that they will probably lean on Gainwell if Sanders does walk.
How about you, yep. Davis?
This is the range where it starts to get a little bit thin here. I mean, I really liked the Pittsburgh running back. I don't even know if I want to try and say his name. Israel
Abanikanda.
So yeah. I mean, he's just sort of the classic. Was super productive in college. You know, kind of did all the things that you expect him to do. He's huge. He caught enough passes, specifically as a junior. He's an early declare. The issue with doing these drafts this early and kind of just get, I also think he's going to be insanely good at the combine. At least that's the rumors, is that he's going to be one of, like, you know, 215, but runs like a 4.38 or something. Now, again, we'll see. So I liked that angle, but I mean, you know, these could be day three running backs, and day three running backs are like a total roll of the dice. The guy, honestly, probably my favorite pick I made in the whole draft was Deuce Vaughn, though, because if he gets drafted, if some team takes him, he's going to catch passes immediately, right away. Now, if he's an undrafted free agent, he probably just doesn't make the league at all. He probably will, because he's too small. But it's just a matter of if someone takes him, because I think he is really good. And he might not be very fast at the combine either, but those two guys in the rookie running back class, I'm really loaded in on them. Israel for the speed score, you know, we'll call him new age Christine Michael, basically. And Deuce Vaughn, I think he could catch like 50 passes a year but this requires a coach falling in love with him, right? This requires Kyle Shanahan, who Doug McDermott, just one of these guys has got to be like, I need that guy on my team, because there's a guy like this that comes out every single year that we're like, oh, he could catch 50 passes. in the right system, and then we never hear from them again.
John Lopp's RB5 is Israel Abanikanda, ahead of a lot of guys that people are projecting to go higher than him at this point. Dan, any running backs you really love the value of from rounds 9 through 13?
I mean, it's not sexy, but I like Jamal Williams there because I think there's a great chance that Detroit's just going to sign him back, and you know they're going to use him to plow in at the goal line all the time again. You know, he's probably not getting 14 touchdowns or whatever, but you know, between DeAndre Swift being a little bit injury prone and you know, the role that Williams had, I think he could be a great pick right there. David Montgomery, I know fantasy, you know, nobody likes him for fantasy because, you know, he's not fast and he's, you know, we don't like any of his metrics and all that, but all he does is just, you know, like, do pretty well for fantasy, even though we don't like him. So, you know, he could end up on a new team that goes pretty well for him. I kind of like the A.J. Dillon pick. I mean, we've got – I don't think Aaron Jones is going to leave the Packers. I think his contract is definitely getting renegotiated. There's no way they're paying him $20 million. But, you know, even with Aaron Jones, you know, even with him on the team – Dillon has become that goal line back, and I think they're going to be relying on him even more this year and using Aaron Jones a little bit less. So I like that pick as well. Khalil Herbert, if he gets you know, if he gets the starting job in Chicago somehow, that could be a great pick.
Quickly around the horn, is there a pick that you guys, and for my running back pick, I liked a few of the values, but Khalil Herbert, I agree with Dan. That was a good one. And I do like taking rookies in this range of best ball drafts because I think you can really hit. I took Zach Charbonnet, a guy I'm a big fan of. And I also took Zach Evans, who I'm not quite as high on, but I think he could land very, very well. Quickly looking at the board, guys, who's your favorite pick from rounds like 10 through 20, a guy that you think could gain a lot of value and you view as a huge value here? I'll start with Billy on this one.
Specifically running back, you said?
Anything. 10 through 20 round, any, you know, dealer's choice, you pick a value you like.
Yeah, I think Zamir White's interesting this year. I really liked him coming out of college last year. I expected a larger role this year. We didn't see it happen because, like we said earlier, they just insisted on giving Josh Jacobs the rock 40 times a game. But if Josh Jacobs is not back with the Raiders, or if they want to protect that investment, we'll probably see a little bit more Zamir White this year. Somebody who could, you know, finish inside you know, the top 40 in the running back position if he's seeing anywhere from 35 to 40% of the snap share. So I think that's one. I had him in my queue when Todd took him. Pierre Strong is kind of in that same situation, right? We're expecting Damian Harris to be on a new team. We saw Strong kind of capture that RB2 role with his explosiveness when it was him and Ramondre Stevenson on the field. It is, you know, Bill Belichick and the Patriots, so we never know what they're going to do. But that being said, best ball wise, it's a lot safer than having to actually click the start button inside of a redraft team. So Strong is another one for me as well. And then Kyren Williams is kind of a you know, round 27, why the hell not pick right there, right? There was a point where I thought he was going to take over this backfield, and it just, you know, they went back.
Schefter told us, man. Schefter said in week one, he said, I'm starting him in that 16-team ESPN War Room league that they all talk about. He said, I'm starting him in that league.
Yeah, I had Kyren Williams going in a lot of places at some point in the season. You looked at snap counts, he was, you know, significantly out snapping everybody for a couple weeks, and then it just went all Akers. So I think Kyren Williams probably sees a decent amount of snap share.
I'll say Roschon Johnson, but I'm cheating because he's crushing the Senior Bowl, and Austin took him there. I think if we did this draft in a month, he's going to go maybe 10 rounds higher.
He's legit, man. You know how good someone's got to be to get Bijan off the field in games Texas is trying to win? Like, he's legit.
Yeah, he's an athletic freak, and he's absolutely crushing the Senior Bowl. So, like, Davis is right. There's a chance that there's an outside chance that he goes in like the end of the second round, and they have Texas running backs in the first round and the second round. It would be wild. And then I also I like the Gerald Everett value there. You know, I think that, you know, we've seen tight ends do well in Kellen Moore offenses. Gerald Everett had big games this year. I think of like that group of tight ends in the 13th round, he'd be the one I like the most. How about you, Dan? Any of these later 10 through 20 guys?
Yeah, I liked Davis's pick of Elijah Moore in the 12th. I think that's potentially a really good one. You know, we saw how talented he was his rookie year.
Feels crazy that they're leaving him for dead just because he didn't want to play with Zach Wilson. Like, who wants to play with Zach Wilson?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a very good point. That was somebody that I definitely was hoping would swing back around to me. But, you know, I got to learn with Davis. I'm going to probably anytime he's going to have two picks before my next pick. They're probably going to be wide receivers, and I'm probably going to want one of them. So I probably should have just picked him. But that was a great pick there. And I like the John Metchie pick, 15th round. I mean, that might have been a little bit early, but I knew Abib was he's a big Texans fan, so he was probably going to be jumping on him. I like him, you know, as a prospect. You know, of course, he lost a year, didn't play at all this past year. But he could be a real contributor on a much improved Texans team.
And Billy, that's a big Dave Hubbard guy too, right?
Yeah, you know, pretty sad to see what happened to him last year. It was really unfortunate, not only just for his own health and personal reasons, but just from, you know, losing that year. We're expecting him probably, if he's back this year, we're expecting him to be probably the wide receiver one in this offense. So I like the pick there too, Dan.
Awesome. Well, we've hit an hour. Really appreciate your guys' time. But before we get you out of here, Davis and Billy, I want to get your Super Bowl predictions. Why don't we start with Davis here? Who wins the Super Bowl, Davis? And if you want to throw out a score for the people who are interested in putting a little action on the game, that would be appreciated too.
So what I've been telling people is just bet on Mahomes for MVP, because it's very hard for me to see scenarios where Kansas City wins and he doesn't win Super Bowl MVP. Obviously, famously, Damian Williams had 150 yards and two touchdowns in the Super Bowl and did not win Super Bowl MVP. I think the Eagles are a better team, but Mahomes is the greatest player of our generation. And I think he, you know, heard a lot of the talk about, oh, Joe Burrow, oh, Josh Allen, oh, Justin Herbert. And Tom Brady talks about this. A lot of these guys who have been a bunch of Super Bowls talk about this. Super Bowl is different. It's not like playing a regular game. And these Eagles guys, no experience, right? So it's like Kelce and two of the defensive players are the only one who were there 5 years ago. So I got the Chiefs in a squeaker.
Billy.
I haven't read the NFL script yet, but I would probably...
They didn't fact check you this morning?
They didn't send it to me yet either.
So it's... Yeah, I got the email. I haven't opened it yet. But we have... I just think that the Eagles are a much better team from top to bottom, right? They have they have a defense that's going to be able to, you know, stop Mahomes. They have the front, they have the secondary. They also have the offense to be able to keep up with Kansas City if it is a shootout. I like the Eagles. To me, as long as we aren't seeing flags being thrown, you know, 100% of the way for the Chiefs and missed calls on the opposite side of the field, I think that it's going to be the Eagles by more than 14. Honestly,
wow, Billy with the blowout prediction. Dan, we can hold off on our Super Bowl predictions till next week. Keep a little gas in the tank. This was awesome today, guys. We really, really appreciate your time. I think if you guys enjoyed this show, make sure you go and listen to the show we had last night with the B-Bag Batoba. I look forward to drafting against you guys again all offseason long. And everybody who's listening, have a great rest of your day. Take care.
Thank you.